This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
Hi, welcome back. This is Heritage Radio Network, and we are broadcasting live from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. And we want to give a big shout out to our sponsors, Big Green Egg and Springer Mountain Farms Chicken, for allowing us to be here this weekend, and for the festival for setting up this awesome double teepee. So if you're in Charleston, head down to Marion Square to the Culinary Village, look for the teepees, and you'll find us here. I'm going to pass it over now back to Chef Rob Newton, and he has guest Michael Toscano with him. And take it away, Rob.
Awesome. Thank you. Chef, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for
having me. Cool. Are we on? You good?
Cool.
All right, cool. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go to Houston and your family and what that was like, and tell us how you wound up in New York, and then we'll move it on down here.
Sure. So Houston was, I left Houston when I was 17. I had a Mexican upbringing. My parents are great cooks. Grew up around the table eating great food.
Awesome.
And but also played sports my whole life. So kind of got into cooking by working at a golf course, picking the driving range, cleaning the golf carts.
Oh, right on.
I got that job in order to be able to practice every day because I was a high school golfer.
Oh, yeah. I think I read that. You were trying to, like, go that route, right?
And through that, I met the chef. Chef was a great guy and kind of got interested in just seeing a professional kitchen for the first time.
Yeah.
And after seeing that side, I quit the golf course, went inside, still played golf in high school, and fell in love with it at that point. Was a dishwasher and moved my way up to a cook. And then when I graduated, I turned down a scholarship to play golf in college to do an apprenticeship, which I got through that golf club, which was part of CCA that owned Pinehurst Resort. So I moved to North Carolina, where I got a scholarship to do an ACF apprenticeship.
Oh, okay, cool.
At the Pinehurst Resort.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, so I moved to North Carolina at that point, and from there went to New York.
It was probably wild for you that growing up in a family that sounds like you really focused on food, but in an organic, natural kind of way. Because it kind of happened to me as well, like to come full circle and find yourself back into doing something that ironically kind of feels familiar to you and badass all at the same time. And that's kind of like that, right?
That's exactly. That's what's so satisfying about it, is getting to bring people around a table and have fun and relax and enjoy food and taste all these different flavors, but also be social and, you know. And
you're like, oh, my family's been doing this since I was little, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's so natural, sure.
And then New York, you went from North Carolina to the city, I guess?
Yeah, so met my wife in North Carolina. And at the time, my girlfriend, we moved to New York. Wanted to work nowhere else. So went to New York, and we settled in. And where was it? Elmhurst, Queens. Got a little apartment there and started where my first job in New York was at Bouchon Bakery. I was trying to work at Per Se, and they didn't have any openings. So they stuck me at Bouchon and worked there for a couple
months.
Which
one? Which location?
The one in the Time Warner building.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. And then a lot of time with Batali, is that right?
Yeah, so I left after I realized I wasn't going to go to Per Se because there was a kitchen full of people with the same promise.
Tears fall.
I went to, I sent my resume to Babbo every week for a couple months until they finally responded. And
awesome.
Started as a...
Did you do snail mail too or strictly email?
I called, I emailed, and I snail mailed.
I love it.
And so finally got a hold of the chef and got to get a trail and started as a tournant there. And then I was like, perfect timing, perfect place. And the
sous chef...
You started
as a tournant. That's cool.
The sous chef left and I became a sous chef when I was 21.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah. So it was intense. It was intense.
You stayed there several years, I think, right?
For 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long in New York total?
11. Yeah.
Cool. It's a good run. I've been there almost 20, so it's kind of like, I can feel your deciding to depart. So you wound up down here, probably not by accident. You probably planned it out, and Charleston's a great place, and
it's awesome.
You guys packed up and headed down here. What's
I mean,
it
was,
been like?
It was the this festival. I was invited.
Oh, really?
I was invited to cook here.
Cool.
4 years ago now, and 4 years ago I was invited to cook. Came down, was blown away by the city. That time still was into New York, so it wasn't ready to move yet. But then the second year I came, it was we had just had our second child, and it was time to get out.
Yeah, sure.
So we fell in love with this place, and I haven't looked back since.
Right on. And what's it been like? I mean, you didn't come down here to work somewhere else, I assume, right? You came down here strictly with the plan to do your own thing. What's that whole process been like?
Moved down, sold the restaurants before I came down. That was almost 2.5 years ago now.
We skipped over a whole period of... you were with Jeffries and...
Exactly. So yeah. I whenever I was at Monzo, I opened Italy on Fifth Avenue, and I after
what a great space.
It was that was incredible. But when I left there, I opened Perla, and I teamed up with a guy named Gabe Stuhlman.
Yep.
So we opened up Perla together as partners, and it was fantastic. And he needed a little help to in a couple other restaurants, so I helped him with those, and so then I was a partner at Perla, Jeffrey's Grocery, and Montmartre. And then...
they got big quick. You're like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah,
exactly.
It's a lot.
So, you know, with the combination of working around the clock and having two kids at home, and my wife is also very talented in the industry, and, you know, she was at Kraft, at Del Posto, at Per Se, and quit all that when we had our first kid. And, she wanted to get back into it, and I wanted to work with her again. We opened Monzo together.
I see.
So we had an amazing
time. She had the experience
time.
Together.
Yeah, we had an amazing time working together. Then we had our son, and she stopped working. And I opened Perla and did all of that, but she was at home that whole time, and she wanted to get back into it. So we made the decision together to drop what we were doing and go open something, you know, get back to where we were.
The whole process of working together has been... It's been awesome. No challenges.
Yeah. I mean, there are always challenges. It wouldn't be worth it if there weren't challenges, but
right.
I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Right on.
Yeah, for sure.
So how long is it? Farfalle or Farfalle?
Le Farfalle.
Le Farfalle. You guys have been open...
For 7 months now.
7 months. Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how's it going? How you been received here? How long did it take to get open? Like, build-outs in New York are just notoriously awful, as you very well
exactly.
know. Like, was it similar here? Was it easier?
It's definitely similar.
Oh, my God.
you'd be surprised. We got very lucky, though.
Was it already a restaurant?
It was already a restaurant. It actually was a place called Vickery's, which is, from what I hear, was a staple back in the day. So it was here it was in that space for 18 years.
Wow.
And then the last... restaurant was Leaf, and it was there for 5 years. So taking over that space, it was everything was in place. We just kind of gutted it and redid everything.
Right.
And that took 5 months, which for me was record time.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, we pushed hard and were able to get our permits when we wanted them, and it was we were lucky.
How long did it take you to find the space from like the time
you moved
here?
8 months.
So 8 and then 5. So within a year, you're like. Boom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the way.
Super cool. And let's talk about the restaurant. Let's talk about what the approach is. I mean, I've looked at the menu, obviously. I'd like to hear from your perspective about how you divide it up, how you like the guests to eat. Like, what's your overall culinary approach there?
So we fell in love with that space because it had so many different possible experiences that you could have there.
When you walk, the rooms, you mean? Or like?
Exactly. Meaning you walk in through the patio. There's this beautiful wraparound patio. So
awesome.
You have about 45 seats out there. There's the potential for a private area where we built a garden. So between that garden, the patio, then you walk into the bar room. And the bar room is basically L shapes around that patio. So you have these big, beautiful windows on one side of the patio. And then the dining room with the same big, beautiful windows is on the other side of the patio. So just the way this restaurant flows in the dining rooms, its own
thing.
Sounds
big.
It's 5,000 square feet.
Holy
yeah.
crap. All right.
The bar room is its own thing. The dining room is its own thing. We have different levels in the restaurant, and we just absolutely fell in love with it. And with that, you know, designed a menu that was kind of for all experiences. you know, casual lunch, a business lunch, or a quick snack at the bar where you can leave for $30 with a glass of wine, you know, and tip. But also you can be in the dining room on the white tablecloth and have, you know, anniversary dinner. So there's so many different experiences, and we developed a range, and not only the beverage list, but also the menu where you can, you know, have a single meatball. The meatballs are served by the piece.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's smart.
You can kind of develop a meal by getting maybe a plate of prosciutto, a single meatball, and a vegetable dish, and be totally satisfied. Or you can have mini courses, you know, going for the big steak or mini pasta courses. And so we have fun putting together dinners like that and getting people to have the full experience, you know, in all the different ways.
You do a tasting menu and a la carte, or you just stay a la carte?
Just a la carte, yeah.
Tasting menus are kind of having a little bit of a challenge these days, right?
For
people
sure.
kind of don't want to hear about that anymore. I mean, it's kind of ebbs and flows, I guess, right?
Sure.
So you guys are open breakfast, lunch and brunch and dinner 7 days a week?
Yep. Lunch 6 days, Monday through Saturday, brunch on Sunday, and then dinner 7 days a week.
Cool. Yeah. I know I was looking through your team. You have a really accomplished team. Some of that had to... I mean, it's a really strong team. Are they from people you knew from New York or other places? I mean, you put together a really nice team, which is... Congratulations, man. It's amazing to see. That's all I hear about staffing in Charleston is it's impossible. There's no one. There's no cooks. There's no nothing.
Talk
about that a little bit.
Yeah. So in order to hit the ground running like we tried to do, I've tried my hardest to bring a pretty established team that I'd worked with, that I knew, people who wanted to come and do something new and have a new experience. So we were able to put together a great team from managers to my kitchen mainly. The front of the house was 100% from Charleston.
Right.
But once we got here, all the New York transplants were immediately putting in their resumes.
We have
probably five that were from New York City. Even though we sourced them all here. But the cooks, it was already a cohesive team that some of them may have been new to meeting each other, but I had known, had relationships with all of them.
Yeah.
And our core team from sous chefs to lead cooks were all, you know, I had worked with all of them in one way or another.
That's so important, right?
Totally.
They know your slang and your lingo and all your sous vide temperatures. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Let's talk about the name. How did you arrive at that?
So Le Farfalle means to chase butterflies. So it means living unrealistically or chasing dreams.
I knew that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So a lot of people think it's French. A lot of people can't say it at all.
Yeah.
But we love, my wife and I were just kind of, you know, that was a huge process of figuring out something that meant something to us, that kind of related to us.
Yeah.
And we saw that flipping through different Italian Italian sayings, and that one was there. Chasing butterflies, living unrealistically, chasing dreams, and we thought it was perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Chasing it all the way to Charleston.
That's right. That's right.
Let's talk about. I don't think I've ever been to a farmer's market on my travels down here, but I've been to. No, I don't think I have. But tell me what they're like and how you find the products and the produce and the meat, and obviously the fish is probably really strong. But just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So. It's
even compared to New York. I mean, let's be honest.
Compared
what's it like?
New York, I mean, you are. There was working with that, like the farmers market in Union Square, where that was where I got most of my stuff. But here, I don't use a farmers market. You have relationships with the
farmers
farmer.
Themselves.
It's
right?
a much closer relationship. You really have, you know, everything about what they do, and they're so proud of their product, whatever it is, and you have these relationships that are. Which are really fun to have.
And they bring it right to your door, right?
A completely different way of cooking here.
Yeah.
You know, where when Miss Paula comes in, which is the Tarvin Seafood, the Tarvin family, they have Miss Paula, their shrimping boat, and that comes in almost every day. You know, this is the slow season right now, so they're not going out as much, but it's right here. It's right across the bridge.
Right.
You can go to the dock where they have their shop, and pick up fresh shrimp that came off the boat that day. You know, that wasn't available to
that.
Me anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
So little experiences like that. Tank Jackson, we were talking about, who's an amazing guy, so passionate about what he does, and raises these heirloom pigs that are unbelievable right here in Wadmalaw.
Yeah.
So that's only 20 miles away. and we're getting these incredible different breeds of pigs.
Holy City Hogs, we should give him a shout out.
Yeah, totally.
He's probably lurking by a fire somewhere around here. Let's talk about Charleston is an important enough food city on the East Coast and in America as a whole to justify its own eater. But what about critics and the whole food, social media? I mean, how many critics are in Charleston? How's that work here?
I would say.
And how's it been? Like a guy from New York coming down here?
Sure. I mean, they want to know that, you know, that I want to be here, that I want to be genuine. You know, I want to live
in Charleston. Which
you obviously
do. Yeah.
I'm not just coming here to drop a restaurant and go to Atlanta or go to Charlotte or something like that.
Right.
You know, I'm here to raise my family. So it was important for me to get that point across to everyone.
Sure.
That I want to be part of the community. I want to be here to, you know, do my part and make Charleston a better place, along with have a great place for my kids to grow up. You know, so we're here for the long run, and, you know, getting that point across and becoming part of the community and giving back as much as we can and really,
that's important, right?
Really diving deep into it was very important for us. So I mean, it's the same as any other city. The critics, there's probably, you know,
are they announced? Are they known? Or?
No, they're. I mean, we know who they are, but they don't announce themselves when they come.
Right.
You know, let's see. There's Post and Courier, the Charleston City Paper, Eater.
Has its own critic here.
Oh well, not so much a critic, but they post
or
a bunch.
Somebody
about,
puts their thoughts down.
Yeah. So.
So I'm doing this consulting project in New York, and it's in a hotel, and there's a lot of struggling about the Caesar salad, not to do the Caesar salad, and I just wanted to talk to you about it. You have one on your menu, and just the thought process from a chef's perspective, because I've got some Caesar salad chip on my shoulder apparently, and you put it on there and the guests want it and it's awesome. Just tell me, encourage me, you know, tell me the thought process about how you did it, you know.
Because I actually feel strongly about this. The Caesar salad, I mean, that's something.
This is not rehearsed. This is an honest thing.
Yeah, that's when you make that salad with great ingredients, it's amazing. So when you pick the
right
lettuce, you get beautiful anchovies. You get Parmigiano Reggiano, and you put together all those flavors right. It's a beautiful thing. So, you know, wanting my menu to be approachable, wanting there to be familiar things, kind of not even elevating, just doing it properly, you know. So we put that Caesar salad. We took little gem lettuce, which I feel like is a little heartier than
more,
a romaine.
More spine,
right? And we make a vinaigrette instead of a creamy dressing of Caesar, and it just lightly dresses those greens, finishing it with these croutons that we basically make garlic bread and heat them to order. So we take a loaf of ciabatta, split it in half, rub garlic butter over it, a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano, then it goes in the oven, get nice and crusty. We cut those into croutons and then heat them to order, and they go right on top of the salad.
So you just met it head on. You're like, I'm just going to own it.
For sure.
Yeah. And so is the vinaigrette. It's not emulsified, but does it still have egg in it?
No egg.
Yeah. It takes you away from the mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise arena.
So then it
that's cool, man. You just owned it. That's nice.
Yeah. Light, bright, fresh acidity. Yeah.
What are some of your other favorite things on the menu?
The octopus carpaccio. It's one of my favorites.
Tell me about that.
We take...
It's raw?
No, it's braised in white wine.
So you slice it thin.
Aromatics, braised in white wine, and we basically, like a torchon, we wrap it and compress it, let it sit overnight, and then slice it on the meat slicer. So it's like a mosaic of the octopus tentacles just laid out over the plate in a circle. Then we finish it with a pickled eggplant, roasted tomato, and a fettuccine. So it's kind of like a 2.0.
What's that last thing?
Fettuccine, a grilled bread rubbed with olive oil or garlic and olive oil.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So going back to your heritage, what you know, talk about what part of Mexico or if you're second generation, where they're from, and then the trajectory of getting so obviously immersed in Italian food, and does your heritage have a yearning to come out in your cuisine,
or
is there another, you know, are you going to do something else that speaks to that? Because a lot of people, you know, ultimately come back full circle on some level to what they grew up with and what they know. Talk about that.
So Toscano is Italian. but everybody's always confused because I'm Mexican, no question about it.
Right. Talk about your name, too. How'd that come to be?
So my family in the early 1700s came from south of Florence to Mexico. Okay, so
cool.
From south of Florence to Mexico with the name Toscano, and it stayed all the way through. And they were in Mexico. My family moved to Texas maybe six generations before me. So from Mexico to Texas, and they were from, I believe, northeastern Mexico. I forget the town. My mother's side is from Guadalajara. They're all the way, Ramirez, all the way from... Yep. All the way Mexican. But I grew up with that kind of food. You know, my mother making amazing Mexican food. You know, growing up with homemade tamales and homemade tacos and beautiful tortillas all the time, always available.
Yeah.
And Houston was an incredible place to eat all of that.
What a great food city.
They're from San Antonio, so always taking summer trips to see the family and then coming home with 15 dozen, a canister of tamales from our favorite place. And
super cool.
And it was just, that was the food that I grew up eating. And I love so much. So whenever I first started cooking professionally, it was, learning French cuisine. And then from there, I wanted to work at Per Se, and then that didn't work out. And I wanted to figure out, you know, maybe something else, another cuisine. And, Mario was huge, of course, and he still is, but sure. At that time was just blowing up, and Babbo seemed really interesting to work at. So I started working at Babbo and just fell in love with Italian cuisine and really became obsessed with it and just trying to learn all the different regions and all the different dishes. And through that, I feel like once I got my bearings on Italian cuisine and started incorporating... You know, little nostalgic touches from my upbringing. You know, when I grew up, every once in a while, on special occasions, my mom would get a whole cow head, and we'd roast it in the oven. We'd pick all the meat, the tongue, everything, the cheeks, the meat below the eye, the eyes, and which is the best meat. Pick all of that, make tamales with it. So those memories, and then at Perla, we sold this dish, a veal head. You can't get a cow head anymore. We would whole roast the veal head, present it to the table, take it back into the kitchen and carve the cheek off. We'd brine the tongue a week ahead. We'd grill that after it was braised, cut the cheeks off, re-sear them, pick all the meat from below the eye, around the jaw, form it into a patty, sear it on the plancha, and serve this beautiful dish with, depending on the season, with ribollita or with some sort of corn and tomato or... but bright acidic vegetables and all the cuts of the veal head and presented beautifully on this huge platter for three. And so taking my, you know, nostalgic memories of my mother roasting the cow head and making tamales and turned it into a dish that we served at my Italian restaurant, you know.
I'm sold.
Yeah. It was fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So, but in a way, it's like you, my original question was like, you know, coming full circle, but in a way you have, because your family's technically from Italy. So
that's right.
That's kind
right.
of awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what else are you doing for this whole big weekend? What else is going on?
So
at
tonight,
your restaurant and, and outside.
Tonight we're doing it's going to be a blowout dinner with Dale Taldi, family style, tons of food, multiple courses. It's going to be amazing.
Awesome.
Then tomorrow night, we have a regular dinner service, and then late night from 10 to 1, we have a pop-up with Jeffrey Stoneberger from Two Nixons. He's going to be making his amazing ramen dishes and a couple snacks and his yakitori. And so Izakaya pop-up tomorrow night.
Sweet.
From 10 to 1 at Le Farfalle.
P.M.
Yep. Yep.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take a break. Chef, thank you so much. Chef Michael Toscano, Le Farfalle.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
I want to give a quick thank you again to Chef Rob Newton and Michael Toscano and earlier Steven Satterfield for joining us in the teepee at Charleston Wine and Food Festival. Big shout out to our sponsors, Big Green Egg and Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. And we'll be back later with our awesome host, Carrie Diamond of Radio Cherry Bomb, and some really awesome ladies joining her. So stay tuned. Check HeritageRadioNetwork.org/Charleston for our full schedule. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.